Hey everyone, before we get started in this episode of the Baseball Podcast, I have to make fun of myself. Tom, you can just listen for a minute if you'd like. So,
Yeah, you know what? I'd like to weigh in personally.
by all means.
All right, so let me tell you guys a story, from my perspective, okay? We shoot all these great podcasts, right? All of a sudden, as I've mentioned before, it is a real flurry of activity here on the baseball podcast here at Baseball Podcast HQ, many say. And we do all this great work, we talk to these great people, and I'm really feeling it, I'm really vibing with it. And I, the way we do it is because we use Zoom, not paid. We use the free Zoom version. We do it in like 45-minute like sections, and then like Ethan will do one, and then I'll do one, and I just send it over to him, like my portions of it. Okay. So we wrap it up each time, pack mine up, shoot it over there. I'm like, dude, we're good. We're good. What could possibly go wrong? So I get I get a phone call, a fateful phone call from my boy Ethan. And he goes, okay, so I got good news and bad news. I'm like, all right, sounds good. You know what? I'm glad. And he's like, so I'll lead off with the bad news. I don't have any video from any of the podcasts that I recorded on my computer. I'm like, you're right. That is bad news. So, yeah, you guys are going to receive this news the same way. The bad news is half of the video for the podcast we're about to put out is gone forever. It's gone forever, Aaron Hernandez, many say. But the good news, and I received it, I was told the good news similarly. The good news is that we still have the audio. So, for my half, the part that I recorded, you'll see video. For Ethan's half, the portion that I did not record, you will be looking at whatever still image he decides to stitch in there. So,
Well,
that's the
ready.
situation.
So for the Phillies one, I'll just put up our logo. I don't know what else to do.
I just put up like a Phillies logo on like a gravestone.
Well, for the Greg episode, it works out perfectly though, because he sent me over a bunch of his paintings. So I just
Okay.
put those up, give the audience a visual.
Okay.
And really, it worked as intended. So, yeah.
Yeah, we were kind of gonna do that anyway, so there's that at least.
So I'll tell you exactly what happened, and we don't have to make this long, but my computer gave me this message the other day, right before we recorded with Greg, and it said low, like disk storage low or something like that. And I was like, okay, whatever, I'll delete some stuff. So I
Damn.
went through, I deleted a few things, and I kept moving. Then we recorded with Greg. And the first one that I had recorded, no problem. And the second one that I had like recorded, and then when my computer went to like download it from Zoom, it said like it couldn't download it. There wasn't enough free space. And I was like, oh, no problem. So I went and deleted a few more things, hit the button to start the download again, and nothing happened. And I was like, good. So I remember I immediately called Tom, was like, good news, it's not downloading. It might be gone forever, but I'm gonna try. So I called Apple
Yeah.
Care, which, by the way, if you have an Apple product, just call them up. They're the greatest. So I call up Apple Care and I was like, hey, I was hoping you'd help me with this. I recorded this Zoom meeting. It says it's ready to download and that I cleared enough space. It just won't work. And she's like, okay. And then they did one of those things where they're like, all right, we'll share your screen. And then it was a click here. How about click here? All right, click here, click here. And they're in like the guts of the computer. And I have no idea what any of this stuff means. But eventually it was like, it was really strange. It was like, it was trying to open it through the Zoom app, but you had to go into this like sub app within Zoom. I didn't understand it, but it's called like transcode, I think. And
Okay.
I didn't understand it. But anyway, the wonderful lady at Apple Care talked me through it and it started downloading. And I was like, perfect. She waited on the phone with me till it downloaded. I pulled it up, video, audio, perfect. And I was like, great. So I was like, so how do I avoid this in the future? Do I just delete it? And she goes, yeah. And then she pointed out, she was like, you're doing all these podcasts on iMovie. You're deleting the files from your computer, but you're not deleting them from iMovie. Sorry, my dog's snoring in the background. But she went, you're not deleting them from
Hey
iMovie.
man, that's what you get noise canceling for. You got this. I
Well,
don't
I don't have
care.
my earbuds in because we're just doing this real fast. But so
Unreal.
she was like, you're not deleting
Unreal.
the files from iMovie, so they're still taking up space there. And I was like, oh. So I was like, all right, moving forward, I got to do that. And then the other thing was she was like, just because you like move it to trash, you still have to clear stuff from your trash. They're still taking up space. And I was like, all right, this is annoying, but okay, whatever. So while I'm on the phone with her, I'm going through and I'm finding all these old episodes, like Donovan Benoit was in there and like Andy Brown and stuff was in there. And all these old episodes that I don't need the files anymore, they're already up. We're still in there taking up space. So I was like, oh, okay, no problem. So I go through, I just deleted like all the videos. And I didn't think to keep the videos for the two episodes that we had just recorded.
Oh, heartbreaking.
So
Heartbreaking.
the way that Zoom downloads for some reason, and this is wonderfully beneficial now, but it's strange. It'll every time it downloads onto my computer, it'll do like a Zoom folder for like whatever that day's date is. And then you'll click on it, it'll have like the audio, the video, and then a couple other things I don't remember. So the audio file was still there, no problem. And I could pull it up and it would play. There was just no visual. And the video is just gone, it's lost. Nothing I could do about that. So I kind of like thought about it and I was like, well, this is annoying. And that means half of the episodes won't have video, but I still have the audio. It's a podcast. I would assume most people are going to listen and not watch. And also, like, what am I going to do? Like, call up Greg Kreindler and be like, hey, you want to have that whole conversation over again and pretend we're talking about it like
Yeah,
anew?
how would you like to reenact the
Yeah,
conversation that
exactly.
we
So I was
had,
like, all right,
you
I'm just
know?
going to go with it. So anyway, so that's what's going on. I'll just put this, I think it's only two episodes that'll be affected, but whatever ones are, I'll just put this like disclaimer at the beginning of it so everybody knows what's going on.
Are
And
we posting the 50th episode special? Is that common?
yeah, I got to make sure that that's intact. But yeah, if it is, I'm in.
Okay,
So
the
anyway,
very special
that's what got Sean's Bradley.
surprise 50th
So
episode.
I believe our Phillies episode will be number 48, then Greg will be number 49, and then the 50th. So
For those of you who, you know, for those of you who are the baseball podcast super fans, I believe that this is going to be listed as like episode 42 or something, but we have unnumbered episodes and we're counting those. So,
yeah, because it's one of those
50th
things where if
episode.
we wait to get to episode number 50, it's gonna take forever. Let's just do it.
Yeah, we're
So
gonna be all different. All
yeah.
right, so enjoy the Greg episode
In enjoy these
and
episodes of the baseball podcast. Welcome back to the baseball podcast. We are thrilled to be joined by Greg, not Greg Kreindler, baseball painter extraordinaire. Greg, let's just jump right into it. Can you tell us exactly what you do? Because as we talked about with the Andy Brown episode, we don't know anything about art, so you should probably speak for yourself and not have me try to explain it.
okay. Well, first, thank you guys for having me on. Hopefully I don't put anyone to sleep or step on like anything that Andy has said, but yeah, I'm a baseball artist, focused primarily on baseball. I like to say that I really enjoy painting dead ball players, even though I'll, you know, occasionally paint living ones, but yeah, that's what I do, my vocation. I actually get paid to do that, which still sounds absolutely insane to me.
So we should clarify, you paint dead ball players when they were alive, not them
Correct.
being dead.
Correct, correct.
Okay.
Or not, you're right. Not paintings
Yeah,
of
he's not
them.
like
Right. Because that would be
I hope it's
weird.
I do like the idea though of showing up to like, the mortician's office and being like, can you open it one more time? I gotta get the face right.
Right,
Yeah.
right, right. I'm actually, is Tony Conigliaro still here? Is there any way I could just open that freezer up and just get a look at him? I could just take pictures. It'll be
You
quick.
would think that, you know, painting baseball players is kind of niche, but painting baseball players while they're dead is like an even more, you know, a smaller
Yeah.
niche.
Yeah.
So, but
That might be a niche of one, many might
Right.
say.
So, all right. So, I have a question and I'm stealing this. I listened to you on Rob Nyer's podcast. I think you were on about 2 years
Oh,
ago.
yeah.
And I have a question because he brought up, and I actually said this about you in the Andy Brown episode. I likened your work to photorealism. But you said you're not quite photorealism. I don't really know what any of this actually means. So can you, what exactly? Because I'm thinking of it and I go, you take a picture and then you make a painting that looks like the picture. That's real to the photo. Seems straightforward enough to me. What exactly, like as an artist, what would you consider? You know, I know there's like terms like impressionist, or I don't even know what that means. There's all these different terms for what you can be as an artist. What is your niche other than dead ball player?
That's a great question. It's actually kind of hard to articulate, because some artists don't really kind of know, I guess, how to put themselves in a box, for good or ill. I think kind of the easy thing for me to say is that it is kind of photorealistic, but it does have, I guess, a sense of impressionism to it, not so much in kind of like how the paint is handled, but in the way that impressionists were very into light and color. I'm also very much concerned with light and color. That's kind of like the main thing that inspires me. So I guess in a way, I guess I have a little bit of an impressionist point of view towards photorealism, maybe. I don't know if that works,
Okay.
but yeah, something like that.
Listen, I'm
Maybe
not going to
like
tell you you're
colorist.
wrong. You're fine with me.
Yeah.
I'm just making stuff up.
Well, I mean, dude, it sounds great to us. We're not sitting here being like, I don't know, man. I thought that was a little more Baroque in inspiration. No.
I've
I
gotten that
literally
before.
know.
I always think it's funny. Well, no, I shouldn't say it's funny because for a long time I thought it was hilarious when people would say, my favorite artist is Van Gogh or something, and I would be
Right.
like, you have a favorite artist? I don't think I could name like 10 artists. I like there are paintings that I go, oh, I've seen that before, but like
Right.
I don't know any artists. And then I thought about it and I went, no, wait a minute, there's that baseball guy. You know
That's
what I mean?
right.
And so I was like,
Right.
I suppose that's my favorite artist. That's the only
Yeah.
person that I can think of. So you have been my, although there are two. Are you familiar with a person named Mort Kuntzler? He
Oh
does
yeah,
like
of course.
military. That
Yeah.
was like the first person that I was like, I can't stop looking at this guy, these guys' pictures. I got to see more of this guy's stuff. But
That's
I would
great.
say that's very sim. And again, you can probably tear me apart here and say, no, because he does all this stuff with light that I don't do. I don't know. But I would say you guys are quite similar because when I look at a Mort Kuntzler work, I go, oh, that's the scene from the movie Gettysburg. And it looks exactly like the movie Gettysburg. It's somebody just painted it detail for detail perfectly. And when I look at, Hank Aaron that you did, I go, that's that picture of Hank Aaron. It looks exactly the same. So
Yeah, same. Well,
anyway.
same kind of thing. Only what's great about Mort is that like the stuff that he's doing is he's able to kind of recreate those scenes historically, and he gets super involved in all the research, which I do too. So he's a man after my own heart, but he's actually like building it from the ground up, whereas I'm usually just working from kind of existing photographs. So in a way, it's kind of. I mean, it could be considered kind of derivative, which is kind of a not something you want to call yourself as an artist, but that's just kind of like a testament to how much how talented he is and the kind of work that he does and how convincing it is. So yeah, I those kinds of artists I very much have kind of like an affinity towards whether it's him or whether it's people like Thomas Eakins or Winslow Homer, who back in like the 19th century were doing kind of similar things where they're kind of constructing scenes and being very particular about how everything is arranged and how everything is lit and how everything is researched and pictured. So it's like I get into that stuff and then you kind of combine it with the impressionist or not impressionist, but I guess kind of like I guess like the, what am I trying to say? The attention to light and color. Like that's kind of like where I am. And then, kind of a little bit derivative. So, but yeah, those
The
guys are great.
do you have I mean, you said that you mostly work from like existing photographs. Do you have any work where you were like, you know what, I'm gonna like create something from scratch this time? We're gonna do like this scenario or this guy. I'm gonna just go from the ground up and just come it all out of my head.
Yeah. I mean, when I was younger, in my 20s. I hate saying when I was younger in my 20s, but it's true.
Me
When I was younger in my
too.
20s, it's painful.
Don't worry, I'm in my 20s and I feel older, so we're
Oh,
just on
are you in your
opposite.
20s?
Yeah, I'm 27. We're just on opposite sides of the same coin.
Oh my God. Oh, to be 27.
Although I do like that you said, are you like you're like I would have thought you were like 50 years old. No,
Yeah,
I'm
I was
good.
thinking like 50. No.
He was really like tiptoeing around that one, like, oh, are you? I thought you were younger.
Like, I gotta go.
Yeah. I thought you were like a
No, I
young 45. Sorry, go ahead.
yeah. Yeah, I so like I would try to kind of recreate scenes that were not based on one photograph. I was kind of into the idea of just creating stuff that people hadn't seen before. So I would whether I'm kind of taking a couple of different photographs and kind of combining them to create something new, or whether I'm even kind of, taking photos of a model, like having someone model for me and kind of work him into the image somehow or into the painting somehow. But it got to the point where I guess I'm super anal about the painting stuff, and I have a very strict sense of like how I guess what the quality of it should be. And I think because I was combining my sources and creating some new sources, I was always kind of aware of that in my head, and it was kind of this weird mental block because it just never looked right. Like I could look at a painting that I did of DiMaggio. I remember specifically this image of him, of him in 41, and he's in Yankee Stadium getting a base hit. I think it was when he either tied or passed Keeler, during the streak. And I took the image of his body from a game that was maybe a week and a half later, and it was an away game, and I put him in, his home uniform. And then I took like a couple of shots of Yankee Stadium from a different year or maybe a different whatever, and I changed them to, to look like it was from 41. And every time I looked at the painting, I couldn't get past the fact that it was like, oh, well, that's from that image and this is from that image, and just doesn't look right to me. So I kind of stopped doing it, which means that, I'm a little less original, I guess. But
Oh, I wouldn't
I'm
say that.
also kind of insane. So, it
Okay,
just
join the
works out
club.
better for me, I guess.
Yeah, so there is, there are things that I think everybody can kind of relate to that, where like the more you're familiar with like how something was done, or like if you did it, especially like those things that like nobody else probably notices. Like if I looked at that picture of DiMaggio, I'd be like, dude, hell yeah, that's photorealistic. But like, yeah, if you're aware of all the different like little things that you pulled out of here, like it looks like you're looking at like Frankenstein's monster, like you can see
Yeah.
like how it's stitched together. And like, yeah, I mean, I think we all have things like that from time to time, where like other people are like, dude, what are you talking about? It looks fine. You're like, it doesn't. It looks terrible. It's awful. Tell me it's awful. And
Yeah.
they're like,
Yeah, it's exactly that. I mean, as a creative, whether I'm an artist, or whether like my wife is a writer, and you guys are doing podcasts. Like, I'm sure you could listen to,
No, don't
well,
lump us in with talented people like you and your wife.
no. I
You
mean,
don't deserve that.
no, but you guys are creating something, right? You're putting something out into the world, and if you rewatch stuff that you've done already, you can be critical of it. You can be like, oh, maybe I should have
Okay,
said
that
this,
is true.
or, yeah,
Yeah.
and that's
Yeah.
just it, because you could say
Can't
that.
argue with that.
And if I'm watching it, I'll be like, I don't know what the heck you're talking about. So it's kind of all like in the eye of the beholder. But I guess it depends on how much that actually bothers you. And to me, it like that's the stuff that like keeps me up at night. So I it's like I try to make that stuff not happen as much as possible.
No,
And
I
sometimes
understand. Yeah. That makes So
perfect
I
sense.
guess what I think the question that's on my mind now is it sounds like you mostly paint like ball players and less so. Like Andy seems like he painted more Andy Brown. We were talking about him earlier, but not while we were recording,
Right.
I think. Yeah, Andy Brown, he painted like vistas. You know, he would paint like the game, and it would be less like focused on individual details. And I felt at least more like it was supposed to give you the vibe that you were like there, you
Yeah.
know. And like for you, when you are painting, like how do you choose who you want to paint? Is it just like, oh, you know what, I'm gonna do a DiMaggio today, or is there like any sort of process where you're like, ooh, let's get a look at this guy,
Well, what's funny, like going back to what you said about Andy, like when I was listening to that episode, and I remember him talking about like the maybe the roof of like the ballpark or something, and him making it red or something like that, and the guy next to him giving him crap about it. Like I could never do that, like in the way that Andy does that, because I'm the it's like the sane part of me says, oh well, it has to be right, everything has to be in order, everything has to be historically accurate. But when it comes down to it, I'm a maniac, and I can't let things go in the way Andy can, because he's trying to get, a feeling, and his brush strokes are very expressive, and we're very different kinds of artists. And that's not saying anything bad about him, because I absolutely adore him and I adore his work.
It's just
But it's just
different, you know.
interesting how each person can take a, the same subject and take different things from it. But what you were saying, I, for the most part, what dictates my the work I do is commission work, because yeah, most people kind of, I'm in a very like privileged, I guess, position where I can say that, I have a lot of commission work going on, and it's kind of, for the most part, people kind of have an idea of what they want, whether it's a subject or a player, or ballpark or whatever. Every now and then they might say, I'm going to give you carte blanche and you can do whatever you want. But for the most part, I'm painting top tier Hall of Famers. I'm doing the Gehrigs, the Ruths, the Jackie Robinsons, Ted Williams. If I'm left to my own, my own preferences, then I usually kind of go more obscure.
Ooh, speaking our language.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather paint the people that nobody's heard of, and I don't care if I don't sell them or not, because I just really like painting them. Like in the way that you guys were talking with Andy about, the Latin American leagues, I was like, ooh, I gotta look into that.
I actually, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, would you ever consider doing like the World Baseball Classic, anything with the World Baseball Classic?
I'd love to. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to. It's a bit more modern than I'm used to, but I would love to paint any of those players. I am absolutely in love with stuff from like the Negro Leagues and the Latin American leagues, dating back to the late 19th century, stuff like that. I absolutely adore painting. Just the idea of kind of giving those players like a day in the sun, like bringing them back to life in some way. And for the most part, no one's ever really heard of them. I think people think like the Negro Leagues, they know names like Jackie or like Josh Gibson and Satchel Paige and Cool Papa Bell. But it's like past that, a lot of people don't know many of those names. You mentioned Turkey Stearns. Like, how many people know who Turkey Stearns is? Like, even like really rabid baseball fans have no idea who Turkey Stearns is.
And Turkey Stearns also, now that Negro League statistics are official, is like the fourth highest lifetime batting average or whatever it is. Like, it's not a nobody at all, you know, but he is to a lot of people.
It's just like his name and like so many of these other players that just, it's like, it's swept under the rug, and I hate that. I mean, especially considering the reason that it was swept under the rug, but it's kind of like, it's important to me to kind of paint those guys. And sometimes I have clients who really do love those players, and they do ask me to paint them, and I really appreciate that. But yeah, I kind of feel like the more obscure and weird that I can get, the better. You know, if
Right.
someone's like asking, you know, why are you painting this guy? Then I'm being like, you know, the willful adolescent. I'm being like, because I fucking want to. That's why.
Yeah.
So
Like, hey,
that's
Greg,
funny.
why
Excellent.
are you painting Pete Gray, the one-armed man?
Oh my
Like,
God. That's a
yeah.
dream. I want to
You just
paint
got
him
to get
so
that
bad.
right customer, you
I know.
know?
Or even if not, I mean, even if it's just stuff that I have in my inventory that's sitting there for a while, which I have, it's fine. I just want to paint those people.
Yeah. Now, is that frustrating ever? Because, and I keep going back to Andy because it's the only other artist I know, but like Andy, you know, does the whole thing in 3 hours, 2 hours, 45 minutes, however long the game takes, right? And so his whole point is I'm going to fly down to some place, paint a couple ball games, and then move on to the next place. And so you can do that kind of as much as you want very quickly. I'm assuming, I'm not an artist, but for you, I'm, you know, it takes months to do a certain one project. And from what I've gathered from listening on podcasts, sounds like you're kind of always juggling a bunch of different projects, working a little bit on one, then the next day you're working a little bit on the other. So you, I would assume you probably don't have a lot of time to say, man, I want to paint Pete Gray, the one-armed man. So like that's just kind of one day way down the line, I'll get to it. It's like, is that ever frustrating to you?
Oh, it's so frustrating. I mean, many times I kind of have to just be, you know, the quote unquote responsible adult and say, okay, well, you know, I'm getting paid to paint Lou Gehrig, so I have to paint Lou Gehrig. But I make it a point that in like my whole practice, you know, the whole kind of craft of it, it's important to kind of to take those days or weeks or months or whatever to do stuff that I want to do that isn't kind of commissioned work, stuff that, you know, stuff that nobody wants. It's just like it's kind of like a refreshing, you know, therapy thing for me in that sense. You know, I like the stuff that Andy does. I get so jealous because, you know, like you said, literally he finishes these things in 3 hours. It's like he does the painting and 3 hours later it's done and he can kind of move on to the next thing. And I'm kind of like, I'm still on this one, you know, I've been working on it for months and or years or whatever. It's hard. And that's, you know, I'm kind of like, I'm a prisoner to how I work, but at the same time, I'm not a prisoner because I also choose to work that way, I guess. Like I need to work that way. So that's kind of like why I'm able to kind of bounce around a lot. So I won't say like I'm working, you know, 7 days in a row on this, you know, on this one painting. You know, I'll probably work on something like for a few days, I'll put it aside and you know, get something that's like the complete opposite. You know, maybe it's a large painting, you know, a large ballpark scene, and I'm taking a break from that and just doing like a 9 by 12 portrait painting, and I just kind of switch it up. And then sometimes, you know, clients get mad because, you know, it's like, oh, I've been waiting so and so months, or in some cases years, for this. You know, when are you gonna get to it? And I try to please as many people as I can
Hey,
before I
there's
paint
only one
myself.
of you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. There's only one of me, and I, you know, I work really hard on each painting, and I, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of life force that goes into it, and you know, I can't rush it, I guess.
That
But
makes sense.
luckily for me, it's something I really love doing. And you know, like I said, I'm like incredibly blessed and lucky to be busy.
Yeah, you got a
So I
lot of people
guess,
wanting to pay you money.
yeah,
yeah, which
is
is
what it
really,
comes down to, which is a good thing.
it is. It's weird, and it's also very overwhelming, and I feel, you know, I feel weird saying that I'm overwhelmed by it, but I am. And it's like I'm just also aware of the fact that there are a lot of artists who I think would love to have that problem, and I do appreciate that, and I am aware of it, but it's yeah, it's also overwhelming, so.
So, Greg, we wanted to ask, there's a two-part question. Who
Okay.
is the most random player that you have painted, and who is the most random player that you haven't been paid to paint? Or no, I'm sorry, that you have been paid to paint. Like, who is the most random commission?
Okay, that's a good question. The most random player I've been commissioned to paint. Okay. Let's see. So Johnny Vandermeer is not random.
He's more
He
random than Gary and Ruth and all the rest, though,
Yeah,
definitely.
to
Oh,
some people he's random. Yeah.
What? Okay, all right. You know what? So there is a ball player that we're talking about a commission here. There's a ball player that played in oof. Might have been like the Virginia leagues in the early 1900s. Name was Dutch Revelle. And
Good name.
yeah, great name. His other nickname was Smiling Dutch Revelle.
Even better.
Yeah. Somebody did commission me to paint him. Reason being, they weren't even related, which you know shocked me. But they I guess for whatever reason, like he was in a couple of you know, tobacco card sets, like the T206 sets, you know, where that famous
Ah.
comes from. So I think that the person had a couple of, I guess, copies of the Dutch Revelle card, and for whatever reason, developed some sort of like infatuation with him. And, you know, I mean like healthy infatuation. And
Or unhealthy, we're not here to judge.
or
Yeah,
not,
like
yeah,
that's
right. Good point.
unfortunate.
Yeah,
Actually, I don't know what he
I won't
looks like. He
judge.
might be really handsome, and then who could blame him?
I mean, you know, he's not my type, but yeah, I did a portrait of him for that client, and was paid to do so, and that was pretty awesome because
Rocks.
yeah, like this, no one knows who this guy is. I mean, if you're a card collector, you know, specifically of like tobacco era cards, maybe you know who he is. He never made it to the bigs. I think the Highlanders, who you know, the name of the Yankees before they became the Yankees, I think they maybe had a look at him, and maybe he kind of like was in a tryout or two for them or something like that. But I don't think he ever made the squad. But yeah, he's the most random I've been paid to do.
Does
That
he's like
was
one of
such a
those
good
guys
answer.
who, you know, if his Wikipedia page is like he played baseball for like 2 years, and then after that, it's like he may or may not have like worked at a cannery,
Honestly, I don't even think it has that much information. It's probably like he played baseball, he died. That's it's a pretty sparse Wikipedia entry, I think.
That's a super funny one. That's
Yeah,
awesome.
that's, I gotta
So,
be honest with you, I was not expecting even that random. Like I had ideas swirling in my head, and I wasn't expecting it to be literally like some guy who played in like, you know, the equivalent of like a men's league.
well, to be
So,
fair, you know, the Virginia League is definitely better than any league that I can get into. So I give him props for
yeah, that's, you
that.
know, okay, fair enough.
But, you know, but there have been like random players that I've wanted to paint that, you know, that I haven't been paid to do. Like I have a friend who, he's my age. He's in his mid-40s. Big Mets fan, and for whatever reason, his favorite player, John Olerud, and I just want to do a painting of John Olerud to give him, just so I could be like, yeah, I painted John Olerud. That's what's
Now,
up.
if you're going to paint John Olerud, it's got to be him in the field with the batting helmet on, right?
Of course, there's no other way to paint him.
That's like this is a non sequ. Well, no, it is. It's a sequitur, but it's not going to be exciting. But my favorite Rickey Henderson story ever is him going. Have you heard this, Tom?
Yeah, I love that one.
Tell it. I might have, but
He went up to John Olerud when they, I don't know, they played on another team, I guess the Mariners or something. And Rickey Henderson went up to him and he was like, "You wear a batting helmet in the field?" And he went, "Yeah, you know, I forget a concussion or something, and so I think it's a good idea." And he went, "I played with a guy in Toronto who used to wear a batting helmet in the field." And he went, "That was me, Rickey." And that's like my favorite heard. I
I
love
think I have
that.
heard that,
Yeah. The
yeah.
quintessential Henderson story.
Yeah, it's so Ricky Henderson.
Yeah, Ricky
Yeah.
Henderson is like low key one of the weirdest guys who ever played baseball, and like I don't
Yeah.
know that it gets enough play because like he gets all this attention for being great, and like I don't know that he gets a lot of attention for being like weird as hell.
It's interesting you say that because I feel like most of the time I hear anything about him, it's talking about how weird he is. It's not
Like Ricky's
usually,
gonna run kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's always
Okay.
him talking in the third person, obviously.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
take that away, he's like literally one of the greatest players of all time, if not the modern era. But yeah, all I hear is about, about like that story with Olerud or whatever,
Yeah.
which
Well,
is
if you think
just
about it, even like the way he played was weird. Like, there's not a lot of lefty thrower, righty hitter guys.
right.
Even that's weird that he found a way to make that work. Like, I'm trying, Ryan Ludwig. Like, I can't really think of a lot of guys like that.
I think also the fact that, like, the quintessential leadoff guy at the time, especially, and really for all of baseball history until like very recently, was not like a dude who would go out there and like walk a lot. Like, I think that his skill set was also kind of weird and like ahead of its time because, I think at the time you're expected to be like, yeah, you're a slappy dude who gets up there, hits
Right.
singles and then steals bases. And Ricky Henderson certainly did plenty of that, but he also like was not above hitting home runs and like walked all the time. And like, he really was like the complete leadoff hitter that like analytics would drool over, and analytics was like 30 years in the future,
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's funny to think like, so, me being a Yankee fan, I always kind of wanted them, and I still want them to kind of get like a scrappy leadoff guy, like a Sean Figgins or like a David Eckstein or something like that. I mean, back then, I mean, because obviously I can't remember
Can I open up a wound for you?
Maybe.
Like a Jacoby Ellsbury.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
But
Ooh.
and then, it's like the closest thing they have to something like that.
Yeah.
Henderson, because he was like kind of scrappy, but at the same time had a lot of power.
Yeah. Brett Gardner, maybe? Is that like your guy?
Gardner, yeah, Gardner's close to that. I liked Gardner a lot.
Gardner was kind of a fan favorite for the Yankees, wasn't he?
Yeah, he definitely was. I mean,
Well, good.
I used to make fun of, the shape of his head, but
Yeah, well, who
everybody did do
didn't?
that. I only do that because I have a weird shaped head
Yeah.
too, so.
Well, Gardner is a favorite of ours because I stumbled across a story one time where Brett Gardner had to go to the court to get like a restraining order against some woman because she was like, Brett Gardner's in love with me. And the way it was like she was like reading into everything she did and everything he did. She was like, the way that he, waves to the crowd, I know he's speaking to me. And it was one of those things where, like, you're seeing something in everything that he does, but it's not real. And
Right.
so he had to go to court, be like, Your Honor, I've never seen this woman before. She's stalking me. Please get her to leave me alone. And I was telling Tom, like, I actually love the idea of Brett Gardner saying all that and then walking out of the courtroom and like throwing her a wink and then like leaving. You know what I mean? Like, everything she said was true, but just no, like no
Yeah.
nobody's believing it.
He
And
just
so,
gaslit the hell out of her for like years and
yeah,
actually
like that took
drove
on
her
a
to
mind of its own.
madness.
So now whenever we talk about Brett Gardner, he's the greatest gaslighter of all time, and
That's
it's
awesome.
obviously not true. So anyway, that's my Brett Gardner story. I have another question for you, Grace.
Sure.
And I I'm sorry, this is going to have nothing to do with Brett Gardner. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. They can't all
But
be Brett Gardner centric. Most of them,
unfortunately, not every.
unfortunately. After this question, they will all be about Brett
Okay,
Gardner.
fair enough.
So you have to do a tremendous amount of research in order to get your paintings correct. Yes.
Yes.
Do
Yes.
you enjoy that part of the creative process, or is it just a necessary evil?
Oh, I enjoy it a lot. It's frustrating because it doesn't always lead to a solid answer though. There are times when I'm looking for information on uniforms, like
Okay.
form colors or something like that. Maybe even just little details about how they looked. It's usually somewhat easy to find that stuff, at least with, the big leagues. It's a little harder with, like, the Negro Leagues and the Latin American leagues. That stuff just isn't as well documented. But when I try to get information about ballparks, let's say the look of advertisements, especially when we're talking about, like, the color of these advertisements or the color of the walls or the grandstands, like, that becomes tough. And it most often leads to an educated guess. It's usually not something that you can find. There's a large library of, like, home movie footage, of color home movie footage that I have access to, from the American League and National League, that dates back to, like, kind of like the late 30s. So, like, anything from, like, then on, I can usually, if I can't get it exactly right, I can kind of approximate it. But when you get back further, or you've get into some of the Latin American countries, man, you can't find that information. You kind of hope that you hope that, like, at some point a writer, might have made, like, a throwaway comment, the double hit by such and such hit off the red and white Bermashave wall or something like that. Oh, okay, red and white, great. And
You'd be like,
that's
yes,
yeah,
score.
that stuff is gold. Like, I get that stuff and I'm like, it's the highlight of my
But
life.
does it drive you nuts that it's not more detailed? Like, that you're like, was it more of a burgundy red, or was it
Of
more, or
course.
do you just go, like, red, fine?
No, it drives me shit. It kills me. I want it to be perfect. Not that, not that many people are going to necessarily call me out on it. But I mean, you know how baseball fans are. I mean, we're all anal about that stuff. It's just like, it's never enough, Like, I did a painting of Hannes Wagner, of him hitting a ball at West Side Park, which is where the Cubs used to play before Wrigley was built. And I remember doing all this research trying to find out, like, what the color of this ballpark looked like, or the color of the grandstands, the color of, like, the roof, things like that. And I must have looked through a ton of newspapers, obviously microfilm, like, literally getting in touch with, libraries in Chicago, having them send me rolls of long defunct newspapers, and, looking and looking and looking, and finally, getting something like that, getting, like, a mention of, the red grandstands or whatever. And I kept having, like, this nightmare of, like, okay, I'm doing this painting, and, let's say I'm, 20 years down the line, maybe I'm, like, giving, like, a lecture, or doing a symposium or something on my work, and, like, I pull out this painting and I'm like, I did all this research and I got it right, and you just gotta, like, stay with it and really dig hard. And then in this nightmare, literally, like, in the back of a room comes out, like, this 175-year-old man, in, like, a cane, and he's like, I was there that day and you got it wrong. And, then my life is just over and I burn the building
Yeah,
down or whatever.
every,
Just turn to
everybody
salt.
just surges to the front of the classroom and they just take all your brushes away and like,
Exactly.
that's enough.
Yeah,
Well,
it's tough, man.
it's kind of like what we were talking about with when you were, crafting your own images, where it's like, you can kind of see in the paintings, you're like, yeah, I took a guess on that, whereas I would never notice that. I'd be like, oh wow, interesting. But like, you're looking at it and you're like, was that add mustard yellow or was it more of a canary yellow? And I will never know. And you were just taking your best guess. But like, to me, I'm like, oh, look at that yellow ad. Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I try to relate to you, Greg, from a very silly standpoint, but hopefully you'll understand where I'm coming from.
You can certainly. I'm sure you can relate to me.
So that would be bad for you if I could start relating to you. So I have this like personal project that I've been working on for like a few years, and it's not going anywhere. But me and Tom and a couple other guys kind of got together, and we have like a spreadsheet. I'm like obsessed with the World Baseball Classic, right?
Okay.
And one of the things that I love about the World Baseball Classic is that it's not as strict as the Olympics. Where are you an American citizen? Fine, you can play. Are you not? Nope, then you're out. Like, I think it's amazing that you get these guys who, oh yeah, like his grandfather was Jewish. Get him on the team. You know, that dude's, you know, whatever, wife is from Colombia, he can play for them. Like, I think that's super fun, like figuring out like how far all the tentacles go into all the different teams.
Right.
And so I got it in my head one day that I was like, you know, the World Baseball Classic's now like not even 20 years old. I wonder how crazy it would get if you went all the way back in time. Like, then you'd have like Ralph Kiner had one Jewish grandparent, put him on Team Israel. And I just started going nuts with it, right? And so I
Okay.
had this spreadsheet putting every single player that I can find. Like, this guy could play for the Netherlands, this guy could play for New Zealand. And it's like hundreds of guys at this point. It's completely useless information that nobody will ever do anything with, but I think it's fascinating. And so I will sit down and just like start Googling stuff and just go down the rabbit hole. Like, the Saber Bio Project is my best friend, right? And so I'll just go and I'll just start searching words like Australia and then see what comes up. And there's nothing more infuriating to me than getting like vague references to something, but nothing definitive where I can't like be like, done, that guy's on Team Israel for in my head canon, which nobody else even understands. But like, there's nothing more annoying to me than being like, just give me something like concrete though. You know what I mean? Like I don't want to hear like a term, the Dutchman. I want to know like who was born in the Netherlands and when. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so like it's like, but then also when you finally find it and you're like, because I'll start putting together teams. Okay, this guy will play first base, this guy will play catcher, you know, for Australia, whatever. And then you're like, man, they got a glaring hole at center field. And then you find the guy from the 50s whose mom was born there, and you're like, yes, you know what I mean? And so it's like that satisfaction's super fun, but then it's really annoying to keep getting like teased and then not having it work out. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. I
Is
mean, is that how
that
you feel looking up
a
the color of the cigarette advertisement?
Absolutely. I mean, especially if someone makes a mention of it, because if like you can have a reporter, talking about, let's say like the case in point, the Philadelphia Athletics, in the like early 19 teens. I've had like varying accounts of some newspaper men referring to the trim color as being a blue, like a navy blue, and then other newspaper men talking about it being black. And it's kind of like, who's right? Like,
Who's
where were
lying?
yeah right where
Yeah.
was one guy sitting compared to like where the other guy was sitting? Because it's like, if you're sitting far away or something, then like, yeah, okay, sure, it looks dark and it looks like it's black. But if you're like on the field and you're pretty close to them, oh, okay, now I see, yeah, that's a navy blue. Even if I get an answer right, historically, like any piece of information, I always second guess it, and I try to think of where it's coming from. Like the Hall of Fame, I was talking to someone about this recently. The Hall of Fame is just like that, because you figure if you need this arcane piece of information, they're probably going to have it. But chances are, if you're digging super deep for something, they don't have that information. Like, you probably know more about the subject than they do. So,
Right. Right.
maybe they'll say, oh, well, it was this color. And then you kind of like have to ask, okay, why are you saying that? Do you have an artifact in your holdings that proves that it's this color? Or are you just saying, oh yeah, everyone knows that they would wear this color at such and such period? So, yeah, it's like you're just constantly second guessing and, driving yourself mad. And by you, I
Yeah.
mean, and then you, I guess, for,
Right.
baseball classic.
Yeah,
No,
we
I know
had
exactly. So
this.
we had this one guy who I forget his English name, because he had like
Are you talking Jack Quinn?
he had his Ellis Island name was Jack Quinn, but
Okay.
when Ethan looked him up. Evidently, his heritage was like five different countries. It was what, like
It
Slovakia,
was wild. It was like the guy
Macedonia?
was born in like modern day Slovakia, which was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, to parents that had moved there from another country, but then he was like baptized in the Greek Orthodox Church, and then he moved to the US, and then somehow this rumor started that he was Native American. It was like, just give me some, like, where am I putting him? You know what I mean?
I think we put him on
I was like,
Team
this guy's
Greece,
gonna fit.
but
Like, I was like, this guy's gonna fit on a team. I just don't know which
you
one.
just don't know
You
which
know
one.
what I mean? Yeah. But then that also gets you into like, there are people who like, if your mother's, Dutch and your father's English, like who needs the third baseman more? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna put a guy on multiple teams. But then also, like, why did I make that rule? That's just my own rule. Like, it's a
Right.
silly, like, and it's not even going anywhere. I'm not doing anything with this. I'm not making money off it. I'm just like having fun,
But it's a cool project. I think maybe what you can do to ease some of the the strain that it might have on you mentally is like just making sure you're consistent about it, like about the decisions that you make. Easier said than done, because obviously I can't do that. I
No,
learned.
I am being a bit hyperbolic. I am okay with just making executive decisions. Like,
Okay. Yeah.
I put Kevin Youkilis on Team Greece. They need a third baseman, and I went perfect. And then I found out that Kevin Youkilis isn't actually Greek. Somebody from his family moved to Greece, and they moved back, but they're actually like full-blooded Romanian. Nobody's Greek, and I was like, the hell with it. He's on Team Greece.
Yeah,
Romania doesn't need any
he's
third
the Greek
baseman.
god of walks. You
Yeah, like I was like, he's on Greece. I've
know
decided. You know what I mean? So I kind of was like, when somebody else comes up with their own idea, they can put Kevin Youkilis where they want,
So yeah, exactly. He's like he's on the Mount Olympus. You have, Zeus and Euk.
Yeah. Okay,
Exactly.
speaking of Greeks, I have another random question. We were
Okay.
looking through, we were looking. No, I promise this will come around.
Okay.
So
Yes, I
what a
like Greek food.
segue. So no, this will come around. Just let me cook. So we were looking through your gallery,
Okay.
and it was a lot of dead ball era guys. It was a lot of like wartime, 1940s kind of guys. And then the 60s, 70s, 80s started to trickle off, and there's really only a few modern day guys. You got like a painting of Mariano Rivera, a couple of Mike Trout, that sort of thing. And then you've got two paintings of the Saint Paul Saints.
Oh,
How
yeah.
did that make it? Like, 'cause I sat there and I was like, you haven't done Otani yet, or at least I didn't see it. But you got George Samus, the Saint Paul Saints manager. How did
Yeah.
that? How did he sneak his way
All right. To be fair,
in?
I mean, though I love the Saints, I love their history and everything. Those two were actually they were commissioned by the Saints, so that's the only reason that.
Oh, okay.
So like there's the team shot of them, celebrating or whatever, from a guy, I forget what year it was, maybe 2019 or 2018 or something.
Must have been before they were affiliated, right?
Right, yeah, before they were affiliated. And I did that painting for the team that's in their current museum, God, what's the name of their ballpark? I forget the name of it, but they have a museum, for the St. Paul Saints there. And it's also kind of like Minneapolis Millers adjacent. It's kind of like a city, like a St. Paul City museum. But the one that you're talking about, so the Samus is hugging, he has his arms around the owner of the team, Marv Goldklang, and it was the Goldklang
Fantastic name.
who commissioned
Yeah, we
him
were
to do
talking
that
about that.
painting for him. So that I wouldn't have necessarily gone, it's like if I'm
Okay.
going to the Saints, I'm going like way further back than that. So yeah, that's how that happened.
Okay. I just saw that and I was like, that doesn't quite fit the
Yeah, yeah,
vibe. You
yeah.
know
And
what
I was like,
I
oh,
mean?
it's weird and it's kind of like different. So, I'll put
That's
it in.
very cool. It's
Yeah.
very cool. And there, like, I have learned, we had a guy named Dan Vaughn on the podcast, who's the, he does the play-by-play for the, he used to be the Kansas City Monarchs, speaking of the Negro Leagues, and now he does a different American Association team, the Sioux City Explorers, I think. But he's like an American Association guy, been there for like 20 years, and he'll talk about these teams like I know who they are. You know what I mean? And he'll be like, oh yeah, well, we were playing, like the Cleburne Rail Riders. And I'm like,
Yeah,
I don't
the
know. I couldn't name you a single player. You know, but it's like,
Yeah.
there is like a market for that. Like, there is like a fan base for the American Association. I'm just not part of
Well, there is. I mean, that for a lot of those leagues. I mean, again, talking about the Negro leagues and like, the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And you have like, there are people in some of the circles that I guess have clients in that are like huge, Pacific Coast League fans. So it's like they're all about, the PCL in like the early 19 teens. I can just write books about this stuff. And I'm like, okay, and I'm here to
Why
learn.
does this interest you so much?
Yeah, but
So they want like Joe DiMaggio playing for the Seals? Is that what that kind of thing?
yeah, which I mean, I've done a painting of him with the Seals, and I love it. I love doing that stuff. It's just it's interesting to like meet people and find out, what it is about them that kind of draws them to that specific fan base. I love that. I think that's cool, and I think other people's passion for that stuff also kind of rubs off on me. Because the game as a whole, it's like I like to say that it's just kind of like this huge tapestry of history that has so many different threads, and they're all kind of like working together to create kind of one thing that's completely connected. So it's like in my head, it's all connected. And I like the opportunity to kind of to paint it. And maybe I kind of just like the idea of having like a diff it's like it's a portfolio, like a huge portfolio of baseball imagery, but there's diversity within the portfolio. Like that's how I get people to think like, oh, this is different. Whereas, people who aren't fans are just like, okay, yeah, whatever, it's all baseball. They're like, okay, well, hey, I can do some American Association guys or whatever. I just do that.
You ever do indirect friend of the podcast, Kevin McGovern?
I have not. I'm
Did you
sorry.
really expect that to land? Did you were you really
Kevin
expecting like, oh
McGovern is
yeah, I
an
painted the Australian Baseball League
whoa,
20
hold on.
times.
Kevin McGovern is an American Association legend, okay?
I did not know that. I apologize.
Yeah,
He played for, I think, Winnipeg.
there are very few AA guys that I've done, unfortunately. That's like another section of like, my portfolio that I would love to expand upon. There are a couple of like Saints and Miller's players that I would love to get to paint, but when you go past those two teams, like my knowledge is not quite there. So I would need to learn first. Once I hear about some weird story or find just like a nice image of somebody, then that's kind of all it takes for me to kind of get interested in it.
I mean, I was talking to Tom about this before you came back, and it must be, and I'm speaking for you here, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it must be like kind of frustrating that you have the way I told it to Tom was like this like superpower. Like I can't paint like that, never in a million years. I could take 1,000 classes, I'd never be able to paint like that. If I could do that, I would want to paint stuff all the time. You know what I mean? Like if I could write like Stephen King, I'd be writing books all the time. You know what I mean? Like, but I just can't do it. And so if I could do that, I want to be doing it all the time. But then when you have to start doing it to like pay the bills, then you get like confined to doing certain things. But you might want to be like, I want to go to the Czech Republic and paint the Czech extra legal one day, but I can't just pick up and do that and spend all the money. I got to stay here and work on Lou Gehrig and that sort of, And so that was a roundabout way of asking. What I'm getting at is, does it frustrate you that sometimes you have to paint the same? Like I noticed there are like five Lou Gehrigs on there, and they're all amazing. I'm not bashing or anything, but does it get like annoying to you to be like, really, Lou Gehrig again? Can you ever ask me, like, you're a Yankees fan, pick Phil Rizzuto,
I mean, I can't, I don't want to say that it gets frustrating. It does get it's not redundant even. It's like I would like the variety, but I do understand, that some of that stuff is kind of like it's like my bread and butter. I mean, like this image behind me, it's a painting of Gehrig. It's the particular image that I was working from is not one that I would have picked if I had my druthers. If I was like, all right, I'm going to do a painting of Lou Gehrig, I would not have picked this image. But the client, really loves that image and really vibes with it. And I'm like, okay, well, that then I'll do it. And that I still very much enjoy it because, it's Lou Gehrig and I'm painting baseball and that's great. But there's also an extra added part of it in that Like, you mentioned, having like a superpower, and it's funny because I never look at it that way because, I'm always just so hypercritical of the work that I'm doing, and it's never good enough. You know what I mean? Like, I always, with every painting I do, I always try to make it better than the last, no matter, no matter who it is I'm painting. And I feel like I'm always, it's like I'm trying my best to kind of get like the next rung of the ladder, and it keeps, it keeps kind of going up higher every time I reach for it. And it's just annoying because, again, ridiculous for me to say this, but it's annoying because it's like I want to be at a certain level. Like, if I have certain heroes who painting heroes who I absolutely adore, and it's like if my work isn't at their level, which it isn't, in my mind, then it's kind of like I suck, and I have to just keep trying to get better. So adding that to the whole premise of painting some of these guys like over and over again, it does, maybe it helps because it's kind of like, okay, well, I'm doing a different image of Lou Gehrig, and I'm going to try to make this one much better than the last one, and I feel like I'm a better painter now, but it's still never enough. There's still, it's like, I compare it to kind of like, the Hydra, where, you cut off the head and then two more appear. It's kind of like you get better at what you do, you become a better painter, and you understand or figure out how to solve a particular like pictorial problem. And then all of a sudden, because you know how to solve that, you become aware of like three other problems that, you couldn't really comprehend before. So then you got to deal with them, and then you figure them out, and then it's like, oh my God, I have nine more problems. It's just,
It's just
it
daisy
never ends.
chains. That
Absolutely. Yeah. It never
makes
ends.
sense. That makes sense. I
But
mean, it. No, go ahead.
no, I was going to say, but this is like stupid stuff to complain about because, again, I'm getting, it's like I'm making a living doing something I absolutely love, and here I am, like whining.
No,
So
but it's not stupid though, because I think a lot of people in America have a job just to pay the bills, right? They go to work at, McDonald's or whatever, and then
right,
they
like
go there,
most
they check the
people in
box. Like,
America.
yeah, like you don't enjoy it. You know what I mean? You just go there and you do what you're told and then you leave. And so like you don't take pride in it really. Like you don't enjoy it. You just do what you're told to get to your boss out of your face. But like you have a job where you get to enjoy it and you want it to be good. And so like that brings its own problems of always wanting it to be good. But then, like, you can step back and be like, wow, look at everything I did. But when you work at McDonald's, you just go like, cool, I made more hamburgers. Like, I worked at Starbucks for a million years, and like, I really liked the people I worked with, but I didn't care about the coffee that I made. You know what I mean? As much as Starbucks tries to tell you, like, the Starbucks experience, you're crafting coffee, like, dude, take your latte and leave. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think it's ultimately a net positive, but I'm also not in your position, so I shouldn't tell you how to feel.
How dare you? Well, for what it's worth, I used to work at McDonald's when I was younger, and I did get an immense joy out of making and eating a lot of those French fries. So,
Now, was
you
it the
know what?
latter half of that
That's fair.
equation that was the joy, or both parts?
It was kind of both. Oddly enough, I think, all right, I didn't love being kind of like on the register and talking to people and taking orders, but being kind of like behind on the grill, like making making the burgers or sandwiches or whatever, I guess there's something kind of like aesthetic about that was pleasing to me in a way. So like getting the perfect fries that are, perfectly crispy and have a little bit of golden brown to them, and getting the perfect salt ratio. It's like, yeah, that's appealing. But
We got to change the subject. It's making me
I'm sorry, I'm
hungry.
sorry.
I'm
No,
it's well
like
look, I
sitting
mean
here feel
like
like, damn, dude, I could go for some French fries right now.
well, like he so here's the thing, like, and I know that we're running up against the clock, but it seems that you are a perfectionist, which I think most people that get really good at something are, because they keep trying to get it more and more and more perfect, which keeps getting you better and better and better. And I am like not a perfectionist at all. Like I'm perfectly fine with just doing good at something and then being done with it.
Oh my
You know what I
God. I
mean? And
wish.
so No, but here's the problem. Here's the problem, though. I'll give you an example. So I have these friends who do stand-up comedy all the time, and one of them is like, like kind of making a name for himself. He does shows, like, we live outside Philadelphia. He
Friend of
does
the
shows in the city
podcast,
all the
Jim
time.
Gillespie. He's
Yeah,
been on
Jim
the
Gillespie, we had him on the
podcast.
show, and so he does shows all the time, and he's like gone on tour, and he's open for people from like SNL and stuff. He's like, making something of himself. And so he was like, "You should come do it with us sometime." Tom went and did it with us too. It's like, okay, so I did it like a handful of times, and I went and I did an open mic, and I came up with like 5 minutes, and I didn't know how I was gonna do. I just like went up there and just said my stuff, and it like killed. Like everybody loved it. And the owner of the club came up and was like, "Was that really your first time?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "That was amazing, dude." And he's like, "You got to keep coming back." I was like, "Okay." And then I came back and like did the same set again. I was like, "This isn't fun. I already did this." And then I just stopped.
Wow.
But it was like, and I'm not saying that as in like, oh, I could have been this amazing comedian. Like, no, I had 5 minutes worth of funny stuff, and then I stopped. You know what I mean? But it was like, I had like no, and maybe it was just because like stand-up comedy isn't my thing, but like I had like no desire to like go there. It was also like kind of annoying, like the way it worked. You had to wait for so long to get on stage for 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like, it was like the ins and outs of it were annoying. But like at the end of the day, it was like I like proved to myself that I could make people laugh on stage, and that was it. Like,
That
I
was
don't
all you
want to go
needed.
do the grind of doing nightclubs all the time and not making any money. That just doesn't
Right.
appeal to me. So I just checked that box and then kept moving. But like, I
Interesting.
kind of wish that I had more of that because I'm not getting anywhere not finishing things. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, but at the same time, there's something to be said for that. Like, there's something to be said to just being like, cool with having the experience and not, I mean, obviously, if you had a horrible 5 minute set, you'd probably be feeling differently,
I had a few of those too, by the way.
but you did
Just
well.
so you know.
Yeah, set number two did not go as well as
Set
set
number
number
two
one.
was
Yeah,
set
I did
number
it
two
maybe
was
five
crickets.
times, and I would say like two or three of them were good. You know what
Yeah.
I mean? All right, well, fair enough, but I'm like kind of, I can't do that. Like everything, at least when it comes to my work, everything I just get so anal about and so obsessive, and it's kind of way to channel that because everything outside of my work, like life, my marriage, my kids, it's like nothing is perfect. But it's almost like I have, even in my art, it's not perfect, but I have more control over it, maybe. Or maybe at least it's putting it into like a productive way of working, and it's like positive energy there. You think of an art lover, like the like one of the images that kind of comes into your mind is maybe like this hoity-toity wealthy person who, have they have these elevated tastes that, it's like a world that you're not a part of. And then, you have baseball, which is, very much a sport of the people. And I think like what I like is being able to kind of combine them and kind of make people realize that, hey, I can be into art. I might not get Picasso or, enjoy, Clifford Still or whatever, but I dig baseball, and if someone's going to do a painting of something baseball related, I kind of dig it. And that like having that kind of those two meet, I think is cool. Unfortunately, I think in the fine art world, a lot of people might think that it's kind of kitschy or whatever, but that's something that I'm trying to like I don't want to say rise above, but I'm trying to kind of change people's minds when it comes to that as much as I can do that, which might not be at all. But yeah, I mean, art is for everyone, and I think that, you're allowed to have tastes that are different. You're allowed to not enjoy looking at like a bunch of squiggles by Cy Twombly and be like, why is this in a museum? I could do this. And yeah, sure. But there's something behind it that you probably, you might not know about that, makes it special or whatever. And it's not so much the technique, it's just like a different way of thinking and looking at the art. And I don't know. I mean, I like the idea that art can be kind of anything in that sense. That doesn't mean though that I go into like, galleries in Chelsea in New York City and be like, Okay, I understand all of this cerebral stuff because I sure as hell do not, but
Right. Are you a
whatever.
Seinfeld fan at all?
Yeah.
So do you know the Kramer, the painting, the Kramer?
Of course.
And when it's painted and the people show up there and she's like, he's a loving caring, and he goes, he's an oafish brute. Because like that's how I feel about like that's how I feel about like the world of art. And I don't mean to talk about you, but like it's one where I'm like, I don't understand how the wife is looking at it and seeing one thing, and the husband is looking at it and seeing another thing. You're just looking at the guy. You know what I mean? Like how are you getting two different things out of this? You know what I mean? Like when I look at your paintings, I think they're amazing, but I look at it and I go, that's Lou Gehrig. How could anyone disagree with my viewpoint? It's Lou Gehrig. You know what I mean?
That's great. But, you know, and then someone else can look at that same painting and be like, okay, maybe they don't know who Lou Gehrig is, but maybe be like, oh, you know, I like the quality of light that he was able to imitate here, or I don't like it, or he didn't succeed or whatever. I guess because, you know, just everybody's looking for something different, or everybody, you know, just thinks of art differently,
So what
which
we're
this
saying
might
is,
actually
be a good segue into something that I wanted to talk about during the intermission. Me and Ethan were looking over some of the stuff on your gallery, and we were looking at the
okay.
color studies page,
Ah,
and
okay.
what I noticed right away was I was like, okay, this is definitely different than the other things that you do. Like
Okay.
it's a lot less like photorealistic. And it feels intentional to me. Like these don't read to me like they're like rough drafts or like you just had an off day. Like, and you know, part of that is because it's called color studies and not, you know, stuff that I didn't sell because it was bad. So like, yeah, so it's definitely intentional why these like look different. And you know, maybe we can like put some of these in there on the podcast when we release it. But so Yeah, if when
it's all right
you
with you, I can
say
put up
that, like a screenshot of it so people know what we're talking about. yeah,
Yeah,
when you
or
say that,
is that like a, well, no, because I don't want to like infringe on, I don't know, really know how like the IP works of oh
art.
no, that's fine. That's
Are you
fine. Yeah.
sure? Okay,
Yeah, I
okay.
mean, as long as you're not, you know, taking the images, putting them on t-shirts and selling them or
Right,
whatever.
no.
But no,
Yeah,
that's
no,
fine.
it
Just
would
put up a
just
screenshot of Turkey Stearns and the, you know what I mean, and
right.
the okay, go
But
ahead.
okay, so when you do a color study, you know, when you're doing these, like I can tell that they're different, but like what is different about them to you? Because I'm just some guy. I'm not like an artist or anything. So what makes something a color study as opposed to the other works that you have?
Well, think of the way what a color study is traditionally is it's kind of like preparatory work. So
Okay.
someone might do a color study of kind of like a larger painting that they're going to try and tackle. And the color study is kind of like, okay, I'm just kind of flopping down color and not really making something super refined or as refined as I'm used to. Because I'm trying to figure out, you know, like what color relationships I want to use or what values I want to use or whatever.
Okay.
It's kind of like it's a chance to kind of play and kind of figure out like the map that you're going to use to get to the final product. So those color studies, what they are for me is they're usually just that. It's like I do a smaller, it's mainly just for portraits, but I'll kind of just do a smaller picture and I'll kind of just I'll play and you know the images will be the same as you know as they appear on the larger paintings. They're just not as refined, they're not as tight or photorealistic. And what happened was people there were some people who saw them when I was posting them, probably, I mean, it wasn't even on my website. I think I was like posting them on a few message boards a bunch of years ago, and they were interested in buying them. And I was thinking, well, you know, this is preparatory work. It's not something I necessarily want out there. But what happened was, I guess the prices of my originals, you know, they were high, and I could take the color studies, which I spent, you know, less time on, and I could put them at a lower price point as kind of like an entry point for people. So I was like, okay, well, I can sell these now, and more people can see my work, or more people can get into the work. That was kind of the genesis of just kind of having them on the website, just showing people that there was this other option. And then I actually stopped doing the color studies
Oh.
because they it got to the point where like I was doing so many of them, and I stopped enjoying them because they weren't color studies anymore. They were kind of like, okay, I can't, like, the client wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the color study and the finished painting. It's just like, oh, here's a way for me to get a cheaper painting, and the difference, I don't see the difference, so it doesn't matter to me.
Right.
And I mean, sure, I like doing the color studies to an extent, but it's like I want to get to the meat. I want to do the real painting. That's where I can really dive into.
Okay.
So I had stopped doing them a couple of years back. I just put an end to it. But they are
Okay.
still on my website.
So do you still do them like privately for like the practice purposes that you talked about and you just don't release them? Okay.
Yeah, I do sometimes. I do them less. I tried to kind of break out of that habit of doing them, with each painting. So I kind of just let myself dive into the larger paintings without without that warm up, I guess. So there's a little more
Okay.
playing that happens in that sense. But yeah, it was this thing where like all of the color studies were the same size, or for the most part, all of them were the same size. They're all like 5x7, so they're just kind of like, postcard size almost. And I would only do portraits on them, and people were kind of really into them, but it was it just felt weird. Like at some point, it just felt like I was making a product for someone to buy, which obviously I'm super grateful for, overwhelmed that anyone actually wants to buy my work. But it was more about just like putting something out and having people buy it, as opposed to like me kind of getting into the meat of creating the art and enjoying it on that level. So
Yeah, I imagine it felt a little bit like you were like distilling what you really wanted to do, like kind of watering it down, you know. Like, oh yeah, I'm doing it worse so that I can sell more of them. It's like, ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
It's a weird thing, and I think I'm always kind of like conscious of how things kind of get priced out, or how I show my work, or whatever, because I'm, like, I guess it's my brand. So I guess I just never wanted it to seem like it was, what's the word? I don't want to say cheap, but maybe that's the word. I just didn't want it to seem like it was like a cheap product, if that makes sense.
Right. Or
No,
like that
that
the
makes sense.
quality is negotiable, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's pretty easy to understand. Yeah.
So I have a question, and I don't want to be uncouth and climb inside your wallet, so we don't need to get to specifics, but I'm just kind of curious of like,
Nothing
how do you, with something, I guess abstract like this, how do you go about coming up with a price? And again, you don't need to go into the specifics of how much you make or anything, but just do you have an idea of like it took me roughly this many hours and the materials cost this much, so I'm going to charge this much? Or is it more like do you negotiate with people about how much they're going to pay, or how does that work?
Well, here's another part of it where I'm kind of like conscious of my brand, and I'm trying to kind of make people think of my art in a certain way. So I don't know if you guys are into like baseball cards or memorabilia or anything like that, but in that
Not really.
world, the price of an object is very much tied into the subject of it. So like, a Mickey Mantle baseball card is going to cost more than a, Dan Uggla baseball card. Sorry.
Well, that depends on who's buying it,
Good
first of all.
point. All right. Intrinsically. So
I'm out there bidding them all up on eBay.
it's like the majority of people who buy my work are in like the baseball card and memorabilia industry, or at least have kind of a knowledge of how it works. And they understand that they're going to pay more for a Mantle baseball card than like a Hank Bauer baseball card. I didn't want my art to be like that because I think when you start pricing your work out by subject, then it becomes more about the subject and less about the art in my eyes. So what I wanted to do was just have a very consistent way of doing it. And what I did was I started like kind of in the beginning, really. I kind of started pricing them out only relative to their size. So it's just, if you get a 16 by 20 painting of Mickey Mantle, it's going to cost the same as a 16 by 20 painting of,
Dolph Camilli or
Dolph
whoever,
Camilli. God, I want to paint Dolph Camilli so bad. But yeah, it's exactly that. So it becomes in the, in my eyes, and I think in a lot of my clients' eyes, I think it becomes more about me and the art that I'm creating than it is about the player. That being said, it's a lot harder to sell, a Dolph Camilli painting for the same price as like a Mickey Mantle painting, for the most part. But
Well, but do clients for the most part come in with the attitude? Because like I would never expect, like if I came to you and I said, I could understand on your website a Mickey Mantle, like if you just decided to paint Mickey Mantle and you just decided to paint Dolph Camilli, I could understand in like an auction sort of type setting. Of course, the Mickey Mantle is going to go for more. There's more Mickey Mantle fans. But if I came to you and said, hey, Greg, I want to buy a Dan Ugla painting. Can you do it? I would just expect you to say, okay, here's how long it's going to take. Here's how big it's going to be. Here's how much the materials would be. That's how much the painting is. And if I asked for the exact same process, the exact same size, materials, and time for a Barry Bonds painting, why should it cost any more? You're doing the exact same amount of work. You know what I mean?
Not a lot, and a lot of people don't understand that. I mean, I not that I want to talk smack about anybody, but a lot of times
Well,
they don't
please do.
understand. Sons of bitches. No,
No.
yeah, a lot of people don't really understand that that's how it works because they just think that you're, why should a painting of so and so of Mickey Mantle that you can sell easily sell for this when a painting of, Dan Ugla sells for whatever, for less,
Well,
right?
I feel
Whatever I
like,
would pay
for it,
right,
Like, I
right.
don't know if you've ever gotten into an argument with somebody about this, but I feel like this is very easily like debunked, where you go, "Hey, trading cards are different because they flood the market with a lot of them, and then people buy up the ones that they want." You're asking for a custom-made thing. You're paying for the custom making of it, not the rarity of this object. You know what I mean? Like that makes perfect sense to me. I
They're
would
all
never
equally
expected.
rare.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Dolph Camilli painting is just as rare as the Mickey Mantle painting because I have to go make it. There's only one.
But it makes perfect sense to you, and you understand that,
But
and
art
it makes sense to
snobs
me too.
is what you're saying.
Well, no, I mean, like, a
Or
lot of
I'm sorry,
people,
baseball card snobs is what we're saying.
they don't understand that because that in their world, like a 52 Topps Mantle card, which is considered his most popular card or whatever, if they're spending five, six, seven figures for that card, a card of Dolph Camilli from the same set. Actually, I don't know if Dolph was around in 52. Might have been gone by then. Anyway, but you get the idea. A card of a random player just from that same set is going to be much less, and that's what they're.
Puddinhead Jones or whoever.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's what they're thinking of. I don't necessarily get into any fights with people, but there are some folks who like contact me and they're a bit uncouth, or maybe they don't think they're being uncouth, but they say not nice things. It happens,
Oh.
but
I
whatever.
hope I didn't join the ranks by asking about the inner workings of the
No,
pricing.
no,
But you
no.
did.
I appreciate you asking because it's a very good question. Something that a lot of people don't think about. Which I think a lot of people don't even necessarily know, the price of making artwork. I mean, obviously everyone prices their stuff out differently, but sometimes if I tell, someone the price of a painting and they're like, oh, I was expecting to pay, maybe like a couple hundred dollars or something, and that's it. And I'm like, all right, well, if that's that, maybe that's just how you value artwork, and that's fine. But you know,
I
you're
won't be
just,
doing it then.
yeah.
Yeah,
It's
that
like
makes sense.
you're gonna have to get it from someone else or whatever.
Right. Go on
But you know, at the
Fiverr.
same time, I hate, you know, being that guy because I don't want to like sound like the asshole, but it's just how the business kind of works, I guess.
No, that makes
Yeah.
perfect sense.
I mean, you kind of are in one of the ultimate lines of work where it's like you got to know what your stuff's worth because, you're the only one dictating what it's worth at the end of the day, And if you
Yeah.
undervalue it, then that only hurts you.
Exactly. I'm a terrible poster boy for it because I, you know, still like to this day, the fact that people, again, I'm not saying this to like brag, but like some of the prices that people pay for these paintings, pardon my French, I think they're fucking batshit. But I
Yeah.
guess, you know, it's like I guess my wait list is that long, and you know, I've had a lot of, you know, luck with like really good press or whatever. And I guess it warrants it warrants the prices. I don't know. But I just know that I'm really lucky and grateful for it, and I hope that I can continue doing it, provided that, you know, I enjoy it for the rest of my life, I guess, which I guess that's all I can ask for.
No, I totally get it. And like, and now we're getting like psychological. You didn't ask for any of this. But like, I think you should feel good about it because it's one of those things where like you might feel like, wow, I can't believe somebody would like spend all this money on it. But also, like, if that person is wealthy enough to have that much disposable income to spend on something, they're supporting a small business. You know what I mean? And then you're going to put that money back into the economy. You know what I mean? Like, they could go spend it all at Walmart, and then who knows what Walmart's going to do with it. You know what I mean? So, like, this is a better option, you know?
I mean, I agree, but I, you know, I have to say that because I try to make a living that way. But like, there's
It's
one, like there's one client I can't name who he is, of course, but
right.
you know, he commissioned something recently, and the price I quoted him, you know, he's gotten stuff before, and he's very well to do, but the price I quoted him is, you know, considerably more or considerably higher than I guess what he paid for the last painting. And I kind of, you know, told him the reason why, and I was a little kind of like, you know, hesitant
How's
to
this gonna go?
exactly.
Yeah.
But
Right.
it's like I gave him the price, which again I thought was fucking batshit. And he didn't even blink an eye. He's just like, yeah, of course. Whatever.
Yeah. All right. Sounds
That's what
good.
it is.
Yeah. Like you could have said $10,000 more and he would have been cool with it. Like that
Yeah.
kind of
It's
thing.
like,
I
oh.
imagine there's also like an emotional element where you're like, wait, you're not gonna like fight me on this? Like that's good.
Yeah. I often tell people that, you know, if I won the lottery tomorrow, you know, the only thing that would change, I guess, was that I'd have a lot of money. I would still be painting baseball paintings, you know, I'd still be
Yeah.
doing that stuff. Like that doesn't change because, you know, the passion isn't about making money. I mean, yeah, sure, I need to make money to make a living and support my family, yada yada yada, but the passion is the work for me. Like that's what's important to me. And you know, the quality of it, that's what's important. So it, yeah, that makes total sense. And
Yeah.
kind of like I would do it for free. Absolutely. I mean, if that was the case, and I did win the lottery, then maybe I'd kind of be like, all right, well, I'm not doing Babe Ruth anymore. And it's like,
Right.
I'm gonna do a
Right, yeah.
series on
I'm
Dolph
finally
Kimball.
gonna do Dolph Camilli.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Now, did
Yeah,
you ever have
just
people like kind of take it for granted? Like I have a neighbor down the street who does pottery. She has her own kiln in the basement and everything. And I grew up going down there and making pots when I was like 3 years old and they were terrible. And I just kind of was like, oh yeah, she makes pots. And now
right.
that I'm an adult, I realize that people are paying like $500 for these pots. And I'm like, are you serious? I have like 20 of those in the cupboard, but it's like that's only because I have been lucky enough to know this person my whole life and benefit. Like, do you have people like, you draw them a little sketch or something for their birthday and they're kind of like, oh yeah, cool. And you're like, no. That's more than cool, pal.
I mean, it's usually if I do anything art related to for someone, I mean, luckily they're usually very happy with it and very surprised, but I'm usually like, you're insane because that's a horrible painting or whatever. But
Right.
Yeah, I mean, your perspective does get skewed. I remember being in being in art school or something like that, and I was a sophomore, and someone like before my first class, someone had kind of contacted me about doing a portrait, just like a pencil portrait of them, and I didn't really know what to charge them. And I remember coming into like my first day of class and talking to my teacher and being like, you know what, I have to do this portrait, you know, someone asked me or whatever, you know, like, what would you charge for something like that? And teacher told me something like, think he said like 700 or 800 bucks. And I'm at the time, you know, I'm like 19 or 20 or something, and seven or
That's
800
your whole
bucks,
bank account at
yeah,
the time.
that's more money than I've ever seen in my life. And I'm like, how could I say that? How can I charge them that amount of money? I can't do that. They're not going to pay that. But at the same time, you know, I didn't consider the fact that the guy who just told me to do that has been, you know, like an illustrator professionally for like 35, 40 years. So
Right.
he's like, yeah, if you're not paying me that for a job, I'm not doing it. So, you know,
Right.
it's all like perspective, like, you know, who are you dealing with, or who, you know, who are you talking to about that sort of thing? And you know, I guess it's like one of the, like what I mentioned about that client, you know, to him, I guess it was like a no-brainer to spend X amount of dollars on a painting like that, but telling someone else that painting would cost that amount of money, they'd be like, yeah, okay, no, I didn't think it was going to be like that.
And they're
So
like, thank you.
yeah, like, peace out. That's the Hollywood no that I get. You get tons of as an artist, you know, it's a lot
Oh,
of
sure.
no responses and whatnot, but I
Dude,
guess
that is so wacky. Like I worked with a guy named Jake. We're like really good friends now. And when my brother got married, I asked him, you know, he had just finished art school. Now he's like a full-time artist. He does like illustrations for like training videos or something. But at
oh,
the
cool.
time we were working at Starbucks together. Classic art broke artist thing to do, right? Work at
Course. Yeah.
Starbucks. And
Yeah.
so we were working at Starbucks together. And he was doing like freelance kind of artwork on the side. And so when my brother got married, I was like, hey, for a wedding gift, can you do like a painting of or it wasn't a, he does like I don't know what you call it. He does like artwork on like his iPad. Like he like has a stylus and draws it
Okay.
on
Yeah,
there.
just
I don't know what you
digital.
call that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. It's really
Digital
cool.
artwork.
But so he did that and I was like, I gave him like a background that I wanted and everything. And I was like, I don't know how much to pay you. How much should I pay you for that? And he was like, for you, like $100. I was like, no, not for me. I was like, how much would you charge somebody? Just like a person. I don't want to rip you off. And he was like, for you, $100. And I was like, no. How
He
much would you
doesn't want
charge
you to know
somebody?
the real price, you
Well, that's
know?
the th but I think it was more him being like, I don't have an answer, so just leave me. You know what I mean? $100
Oh,
and
it
leave
was
me
more like
alone. You know?
that. Okay.
Yeah, because like
Okay.
he wasn't doing this like professionally all the time. You know what I mean? Like I think it was him being like, let's just do $100 and be done with it. You know what I mean? Like, and then I
Right.
can get started. You know, like it's like we don't need to haggle over you giving me $25 more or something. So I was like, all right. So I paid him $100. I have no idea if I ripped him off or not, but it turned out well. So.
Yeah, it's like that for a lot of artists. I mean, they're just like, you know, it's hard to put a value on what you do. It's weird. I think the only reason I feel better about it is because I've been doing it for, you know, a while now. So it's not as awkward for me. But yeah, in the beginning it was like, are you kidding me? It's just, you know, just give me $100 or whatever. That's fine. It doesn't matter that I, you know, spent like 300 hours painting this thing. Yeah, it's $100. I can't charge you more than $100.
Right.
Yeah, art's
Yeah, come on, 33 cents an hour, man, you
Yeah,
know?
that's fine. Come on, these are, you know, this is the depression again. I'm fine with that. I mean, I was only making, you know, $3.80 an hour after taxes at McDonald's. So it's like, yeah, let's go back to that. That's fine.
You learn to live on less.
Yeah, I
Yeah, we're
guess.
living within our means, you
Yeah,
know?
exactly. Beans on the weekend and, you know, pull yourself up by
And then beans throughout
fibers.
the week also at that point.
Yeah, just beans.
Yeah,
Yeah, just beans.
maybe a little
Yeah.
ramen for a treat, you
No,
know.
no.
Listen,
Well, you got free French fries, you said, right?
I still have
That's
ramen all the time, which is not
Oh
good.
yeah, ramen's great.
But
I'm not
still,
trashing ramen.
okay,
Don't
good.
get me wrong. I'm a big ramen fan.
Okay, good. Just making sure.
Yeah.
No, listen, I just am aware that it's cheap. That's the only reason I bring it up. It's
Okay.
also good.
Yeah. It's
Although
wonderful.
this might be a hot take from me. I think it is. I think you should undercook the noodles. That's where I'm at on ramen.
Okay.
Because
How much
every
of an undercook are we talking?
like a minute less than you're supposed to. I
Okay.
want them to be like not stiff,
You want
but
them al
like
dente.
when you
Yeah.
cook it all the way, I always feel like the noodles just like dissolve into the broth, and then I have like sludge, and I'm like, I don't love that, so I'm gonna do it the right way and undercook the noodles so they stay noodular.
Noodular. No, I think that's a good take. I never thought of it that way. I mean, I guess maybe it didn't really bother me when they're cooked to their, full
Their
potential.
fullest potential.
Yeah,
Yeah.
to their greatest extent. Yeah.
We're going off the rails here, man. I mean, I'm a big
Yeah.
undercooked d dessert guy. Like when you get a brownie and it's like gooey, I'm like, yep, that's the way to
Okay.
do
Okay. Yeah,
it.
I could get that.
This
So.
has been we talked about food a lot more than I expected
Yeah,
to
we have.
on
No,
the
are you
art
kidding? This has been a blast.
podcast.
No, Greg,
Yeah.
this has been awesome. I think we've taken up more than enough of your time. And I know Tom has something to do at some point. So we should probably start to wrap it up. Is
Dude,
there anything
go
we
to bed.
haven't
It's
gotten
11:53.
is there anything we haven't gotten to talk about yet that you're just itching to talk about, like noodular
Yeah, I was
ramen
gonna say, like Chinese food.
or how do you feel about ravioli? What's your favorite filling? Are you a cheese guy?
Or just something that
Like
you'd like there to like to be out there about the world of baseball and art or anything in between.
I mean, I love baguettes. Let's just put that out there.
That's such a good take, man. That's
Nothing wrong with a big head.
I mean, I don't know. I'm incredibly grateful that, that I'm able to do this stuff and make a living and somehow make people happy with it. Like if fact that, I could do stuff and you guys come across it and make you, want to talk to me, that's amazing to me. So maybe I'm doing something right, but I just hope I can keep doing it. Like I said, that's all I can really hope for. I'm grateful for any morsel of attention that I get, as long as it's, positive.
Right.
Grateful for any bread morsel that I get too.
No, this has been great, and I'm sure I've said a lot
Yeah.
of uncouth things that you can go tell your art friends, and you'd be like,
No, no.
this oafish brute.
No,
Yeah, I'm now the
no, not listen, not once
oafish
have either of you said it, anything even remotely like,
oafish
gag
brucean.
worthy or whatever.
So what you're
Okay.
saying is we've remained couth.
I
Yeah.
think you've probably always been couth. I think maybe you're worried about
Well,
being
he
uncouth.
doesn't know us very well, Tom.
I mean, maybe
Yeah.
not. Maybe you
You
just
should
brought up the show.
ask our CIA agent or
Yeah.
FBI or
Well,
whoever
that's
it is who is domestic. I forget which one. But I have one final
Yeah.
question. It may be something of a call to action, okay?
Okay.
Because
Yeah,
the
go ahead.
baseball podcast has many wealthy patrons,
Okay.
okay? There is at least zero of them. And who is the one player that you've always wanted to paint, and you just need somebody to get that extra nudge to be like, you know what? I'm gonna commission a painting of this guy. Who's the your dream painting that you want to sell?
Very good
Who would
question.
you go with?
It's a great question.
It's the $1 million question.
There isn't a specific player that comes to mind.
Okay.
There are lots of images that I have in my files or whatever that I would kill to work on. The problem is the ones that I want to give my attention to, it changes like week after week. I have to think of something. You know what? If anybody wanted to get in touch with me and wanted me to paint someone who was not a top tier Hall of Famer, then I would love that. If someone wanted me to paint an obscure Negro leaguer or an obscure All American Girls Professional Baseball League player or something, it's just something off the beaten path, then I would jump for that. I mean, I jump for anything really. I'm a
Right.
pretty
You would
easy.
jump a little harder for
I
that,
would jump a
though.
little
You're a
harder.
jumper. You like jumping.
I like jumping
Yeah.
and eating.
Mm.
Yeah, I like both of those things.
Okay.
Yeah, but I can't. It's hard to kind of think of one specific player,
Okay,
unfortunately.
but you have like a genre of player that you're chasing. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I
here,
mean,
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. We can have you on again if you haven't wanted to kill us yet. And then you can tell us then. How about
Okay, that's fine. I mean,
that? All
I'll
right.
have to do a little, thinking. I'll have to have
Soul
a
searching.
good soul searching. I'll have a good think. Yeah, I mean, it's weird because like even behind me, I have a couple of like stretcher bars or whatever or canvases that aren't primed yet, and some of them are commissions, and like some of them are like, oh well, I want to do this image that no one has commissioned, and then it's like, oh shit, I got to get back to doing commission work, so I got to put that
You're
aside.
locked in. You're
Yeah,
locked
so I'm
in.
locked in. So it's like there are like remnants of that stuff like throughout the studio.
All right, we'll just wrap it up real quick.
Yeah, so yeah, Greg, go
Get
ahead
back to yours.
and plug everything you got.
Yeah.
That sounds vaguely erotic.
Whoa, well,
And now wait,
first
what if I
off,
was going, what if I wanted it to be very
it's very
erotic?
explicitly erotic.
Yeah.
All right, done. That works too.
Don't
I
paint that.
guess if anyone wants to ever see any of my work, you can go to my website, which is Greg, Graig, Kreindler, Kreindlar.com. As long as you can spell my name, you can, or even spell it closely to what it should be, you can find me. You can find me on Twitter, or X, on Facebook, Instagram, all those places. I'm pretty easy to find, I think.
Okay.
So come check me out.
Sounds good. Sounds
All right.
awesome.
Well,
Greg, this
Greg.
has been awesome. Thanks so much for wasting so much time with us. We've had
don't
an absolute blast.
Same here. I don't think it was wasted. I enjoyed myself very much.
Well, I'm glad you're as
What?
brutish and oafish as we are.
Oh, I very much so.
Yeah. But no, this has been awesome, really. You've given us more time than we deserved, and let's do it again at some
Stop.
point. Or we could have you and Andy on and do like a face off and try and like pit you
Oh,
guys against each other somehow.
art off.
dude, I would love that. I actually I messaged him after I listened to the episode and I was like, dude, just miss having art friends to talk to because I
Dude,
oh you don't have like art buddies?
let's network it.
yeah. I mean, I it's tough in Brooklyn. There are a lot of people here, and like, maybe a few of my friends who are like working professionals, which is. It's a bit different talking to a working professional, I guess, than it is talking to like, a Sunday artist kind of person. Not
Right.
to, not to throw shade or whatever, but
No, go ahead and throw
different thing.
things.
Andy's in England and it's like, oh man, why can't you live closer? We can hang out and complain about clients or whatever. But yeah, if you ever wanted to have us both on, that would be
We
freaking
got to do it. We got to do the ultimate art baseball crossover episode. That's like you can't really draw it up more perfectly than that.
Yeah, I mean, you there. I don't know if you care to do this or want to go in this direction, but if you guys ever do want to talk to other artists, I know plenty of other baseball artists who are different than me and different than Andy, and I'm sure they would be fun to talk to. But
You know what?
I don't know if you want to be the preeminent baseball art podcast.
I mean, we got to find a niche somewhere.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, someone's got to do it.
Yeah. Well, this has been awesome. I hope
Yeah.
your son and your dog behave themselves for the rest of the night. And thanks so much for coming on, man. This has been super, super fun, and I've learned a
Yeah,
lot
thank
and
you.
made a fool out of myself.
Hey, listen, it's not a good night unless you do that.
Exactly.
You're really onto something
Thank
there, you
you.
know
That's what I'm saying. But I had a great
that?
time too. Thank you guys for
Yeah.
having me on. And if
It
if
was.
it's anything you guys want to use for this, any imagery or whatever, just let me know and I'll get it to you.
Okay, sounds good, man. I'll let you know.
Cool. Thank you.
All right.
All right.
You guys have a
Thanks a
great
lot. Be
night.
safe, Greg. All right, have
Thanks.
a
All
good one, man.
right.
Thank you.
Take
All
care.
right. Thank you, Greg.